Just because you've taken a player at a different profile previously or at the same position previously does not mean you're going to avoid that in a draft. Like Peter said earlier, you want to take the best players available.
Hello, everybody. It is another Baseball America hot sheet, and we are T-minus 6 days as we talk to you guys before the draft. It's hard to believe it's here. It's hard to believe that we already have a question. Okay, Caden Arkader. Congrats to kudos to you. Like, I hadn't even gotten out of hello before you had that question. That question had to be written somewhere, copy and then pasted, because otherwise, no way you wrote it that quickly. Man, that is just impressive. I want to call that out, but we will get to it. So we will get to that in a second. But I do want to at least say hello to everybody here and just kind of spell out how excited we are that the draft is here. Carlos Collazo, Peter Flaherty, who have been working on the draft since really before this time last year, looking ahead to the 2025 draft, because we do prepare for we're preparing for the 26 and 27 drafts right now as well. But the awesome thing about this is that as we get ready for yet another baseball draft, it's a big deal now. I'm not going to say it's the NFL draft. I'm not even going to say it's the NBA draft, but it's something that if you are a baseball fan, you care about now. And I say that, I'm excited to say that, because that used to not be the case. When I started at Baseball America, do you remember those IMAX, the ones that were colored and looked like a little wedge, and they had a really bad mouse with them and all that? Well, I had one of those at Baseball America, and it was paid for, because if you go back to the late 90s, the baseball draft was a secret. MLB didn't even want to tell the players drafted what round they were drafted in until years, or not years, but months, weeks, months later. And so Baseball America faxed out the actual draft order of who was picked. And that was a fax service we did until basically baseball finally put up their hands and said, okay, we will actually tell people who was drafted. Now the thing's on TV. Carlos is going to be on the broadcast. It's great to see it. So let's get to our first move. And we are here, and we have the draft guide to get you ready over at baseballamerica.com, when it's going to be, how you can watch, top players, draft order, all those things. But, and I promise you we'll get those questions, but Carlos, the thing that I think that jumps out today is the team that's picking 1-1, the Nationals, fired their general manager and their manager, but for our purposes of the draft, fired their general manager yesterday. How significant is that? How important is that? And how much may that kind of alter things?
It's very important. I mean, the person responsible for ultimately who the pick is going to be 1-1 is sometimes GMs are ultimately just going to make the decision. Sometimes it's a collective effort from the scouting group. Sometimes the scouting director is tabbed as the guy who's making the ultimate decision. So it varies from team to team, but Mike Rizzo was ultimately the one in charge for the Nationals. He's been with the organization for a long time now. And so I would be surprised if there were any players who weren't already in the conversation for the Nationals that entered the picture because of this move. But I also don't think it's crazy to say that like who they draft now is different than who they might have drafted with Rizzo in charge. It's just a lot of it is speculation. I mean, I think there are a number of interesting ways you could go in trying to figure out like who's more or less likely to be the first overall pick. I have some thoughts, but I ultimately think the Nationals were still considering a fairly large group of names. Even right now, I would expect most teams are starting to narrow down those names over the next few days once more concrete conversations happen with signability. But yeah, this is definitely one of the biggest pieces of news you could maybe have at this stage in the draft, with no games, no players, and everything kind of in the bank and ready to roll. So it's definitely interesting.
The other thing we will note with that is it also is not unprecedented. If you go back to 2006, the Royals had the number one pick, and they fired their GM, Allard Baird, on May 31st. The draft was starting on June 6th that year. So very similar timing to this. In that case, the Royals right away hired Dayton Moore to become their new general manager. But in doing so, he was working for the Braves. He was involved in the Braves draft. And so the Braves and the Royals agreed that Dayton would have nothing to do. His start date would be as soon as the draft was over. He had nothing to do with the Royals picking Luke Hochever 1-1 overall. That was Derek Ladner, who was the scouting director, and his staff, who made the decision, ran the draft, where Dayton kind of came in right after that. And I guess the other example we have to point out is, it's a little bit longer, but you go back to 2009, when the Nationals had the number one pick, Jim Bowden unexpectedly, kind of surprisingly, resigned in March 1st, and Mike Rizzo became the interim GM. And so Mike Rizzo made that choice, chose Steven Strasburg, Strasburg that year, Bryce Harper not long after that. So he really hit on that, kind of set the stage for the franchise, for the organization for years to come. But Carlos, the other thing that stands out with that is that was a draft when Mike Rizzo came, took over and did that. That was a draft where there was a clear, picking anything other than Steven Strasburg would have been surprising. This is a year where it feels like it's much more wide open. Here we are 6 days before the draft.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting too, because I think your initial feel for like which players are more or less likely to be the pick now is different than mine. So I'm curious to talk about it a little bit. I mean, my understanding and my thought process throughout this has been a lot of people have put players like Seth Hernandez or hitter like Ethan Holliday, maybe less so Ethan Holliday, but for these purposes, Seth Hernandez as maybe a more Mike Rizzo feeling sort of pick, because Rizzo does have an old school scouting background. Seth Hernandez is super toolsy, high upside. Maybe there's even more of a priority on contact skills with the first spot. Maybe there's a more likely scenario where the team is going to hunt deal savings. The people in charge of the scouting department there, Danny Haas, Brad Sciola, come from teams that I associate as being very model heavy. The D-backs, the Orioles, both those teams have been very hitter heavy at the top. Both those teams have explored underslot options. Not that underslotting players is not super common with all teams, but your gut feel, your instinct was that maybe this means that there's less of a priority or a preference for a fast moving player, which I thought was interesting too, and not necessarily my initial instinct.
This is purely speculation on my part. It depends on kind of where the feel was, right? Like if Mike Rizzo was let go, Davey Martinez was let go, because the feel is that this is a rebuild that is taking longer than it should. Now, the funny thing about that is that the rebuild has actually also, they hit on the Juan Soto trade, like trading a star and getting real talent in return is hard to do. It's hard to imagine doing much better than they did with the Juan Soto trade. The team has not spent a whole lot of money to kind of bolster that. And so they're not winning at the level that they need to win. So that's kind of all kind of fits into this. So maybe that could have played in a role in kind of saying, hey, we want to go something a little bit more bang for the buck, a little bit more impact. And Peter, the one other thing that kind of jumps out with that is that, okay, let's just say that is the way that the new regime wanted to go. There are also players, I feel like, especially pitchers in this group at the top of the draft, that if they wanted to go in that direction, that would be potentially pretty fast movers for them, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Cade Anderson certainly stands out. He's our college starting pitcher one. He's my personal starting pitcher one. And then obviously there are other arms that have long been near at towards the top. Jamie Arnold from Florida State stands out. Liam Doyle has probably been the, I don't want to say most famous name, but perhaps most exciting, just given he plays for Tennessee, the level of success he's had, the thunderous fastball, which we'll touch on a little bit more as we get further into the show. But those are the three big names that stand out. Obviously, Anderson, for me, is still the leader in the clubhouse. If they do go the college arm route, I'd find it hard to believe that that's the direction that they don't go in if they end up going with a college arm at one. And I echo Los's sentiments while, it means something that the guy that's making the decision or the ultimate decision is no longer around the organization, but they're still scouting the same guys. The player pool remains the same, though the preference might have shifted a little bit.
So, okay, we do want to get to those questions. Like I said, we appreciate Caden especially jumping in literally within 5 seconds of us joining the show. So Caden asked, if the Padres went under slot in the first and used the savings in the third, since they don't have a second, who could be targets for them in those rounds? I would just say right there before I go to you, Carlos, that you just laid out right there. We know that the Padres are a team that loves to make big swings. The degree of difficulty of doing it goes up a little bit, doesn't it, Carlos, if you don't have a second round pick?
Yeah, it does for sure. The Padres also just, you would expect them to have a smaller bonus pool because they're missing a pick, but I think they're third lowest in terms of total bonus pool to work with. Only the Mets and the Yankees have less to spend than they do. That said, the Padres are probably going to be on a lot of high school profiles that a lot of teams aren't on, so there's still a possibility that they could get creative with some players. Some names that I would have associated with them for potentially later in the draft would be Josh Owens, high school shortstop from Tennessee. I don't think he's going to get to the third round. I imagine there are some teams who are going to be on him earlier than that. Another high school shortstop is Dax Kilby. Evan Jones out of Pennsylvania would be a name I throw at you. And then I think Cam Leiter is an interesting wild card that I think the Padres would be on. So those would be some names to maybe throw out as potential fits in that third round range for overslot options.
And we have another question here from Brad. Brad Odoms asks, as an LSU fan, what high school prospect should I write off as not making it to campus? Just to kind of give you an idea of the LSU commits that we have in the top 100, we have Brady Ebel, who's part of the Corona trio. We have Briggs McKenzie. We have Quentin Young. We have Jaden Fowski. And we have Miguel, and I apologize.
Cime Jr.
Actually, I'm going to kick that. Yeah, Carlos, I'll kick that to you. What is the pronunciation?
Miguel Cime Jr. is how I've been saying. I believe that's how it's pronounced. So I think, I mean, most of those guys, I actually don't think there's like a no doubt LSU commit that's definitely not getting to campus. I mean, even further down our board, Landon Hodge is a catcher out of California who I think has a pretty decent chance to get drafted and signed. So if I was an LSU fan, I would not anticipate him reaching campus. I think Quentin Young is going to have enough interest in the draft and enough teams excited about his tools that I would maybe expect him to get to campus less than I would expect a guy like Brady Ebel or Briggs McKenzie. Both Ebel and McKenzie are in this interesting range where a lot of teams like them starting in the comp round, and a lot of it is just going to depend on what their signing bonus ask is. And without knowing that, it's hard to say with any certainty. But they don't have anyone that we have ranked inside the top 30 who are like, these guys are definitely not getting to campus. So that's how I'd phrase it.
But we got more questions coming in. We also want to talk about our staff draft that we just did, that we just wrapped up. We'll do that right after this quick break.
Kratz, we talk about HelloFresh a lot, but in the same fam is another option for you if you're looking to go on your little wellness journey or you're very picky in terms of what you're looking for ingredients-wise. You can go Green Chef this summer.
And I can heat and eat because this summer I've got like 3 days where I'm not doing anything. I'm sure those are going to get scheduled with something. Let's give me something super quick that I can heat up. The whole family's eating healthy and they're full.
Menus change weekly, 80-plus dietitian-approved weekly meal options. Green Chef makes it easy to find those meals to fit your lifestyle, so go check it out. FT fam, there is an exclusive offer. Make this summer your healthiest yet with Green Chef. Head to greenchef.com/50territory and use code 50territory to get 50% off your first month, then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. That's code 50territory at greenchef.com/50territory.
And we're back. So we also, as we said, we just did a staff draft. Now we want to explain, a staff draft and a mock draft aren't the exact same thing. A mock draft is where Carlos says, here's what I'm hearing. Here's my predictions on how the different players are going to go. Here's the different players connected to this team, connected to that team. The staff draft is one where we get all of us BA draft Knicks together and we pick the top 40 picks. And sometimes we're going to do that trying to make it fit a little bit with the organization picking. And sometimes it's more of like, this is a guy who, here's why I think he should go here. But the key thing about it is if you're on this right now, watching it on YouTube, next thing you should watch, I think you'll enjoy, is the staff draft, because it's also a way for us to talk about 40 different players in depth, because we talked about all the players that we picked, give you kind of insights on why they kind of slot in that area. And so that's the staff draft that is there. And Peter, we love this exercise. We do it. This is our third staff draft of the year. What did you come away from this one? You know, having done this now a few times, I think it also provides insights for us into the draft board. What did you come away thinking about this draft? Is there a certain area that you would, if you were a team, kind of love to have a pick, or what kind of jumped out to you?
Yeah, I'd say at first, you know, this is a take that we've long had, but how wide open it is sort of at the top still. And I'm sure if we're feeling this, the Washington Nationals brass is also feeling it. you know, I know Jeff had the first pick, but I was thinking through my head what I would do if I had the first pick. And there were probably four or five, you know, maybe even six names that ran through my head. I ended up going with Cade Anderson at two, and Jeff ended up going with Ethan Holliday at one, which very well could be the first and second overall picks come draft night this Sunday. But I think the high school shortstop demographic at the top is really impressive. The two names that stick out to me most are Eli Willits and JoJo Parker. And then you also have Kaysen Cunningham, Billy Carlson, Steele Hall. There are a litany of high-level high school shortstop prospects at the top. And I think, you know, if you're picking in the top 10, no matter where it is, this thing could kind of go haywire pretty quick and go in a number of different directions. But I think you can feel pretty confident in there being a high-quality player available.
Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? It's true. Your biological age, the age of your cells and organs, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, dementia, and more. That's why learning your biological age can be truly life-changing. And that's exactly what the True Age Test from True Diagnostic helps you do. With just a simple at-home test, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights into your true biological age and take control of your health like never before. No doctor's visits, no labs, just a quick finger prick from the comfort of your home. I recently ordered the test myself because I really wanted to get a clearer picture of my long-term health. It was eye-opening to learn that if your biological age is just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk for major diseases can go up by 30 to 50%. That's a huge wake-up call for me. But here's the good news, and this is the part that really inspired me. Up to 90% of biological aging is driven by lifestyle. That means the way we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress plays a massive role in how fast or slow our body's age. True Diagnostic doesn't just tell you your biological age. It gives you a personalized report full of clear, science-backed steps you can take to actually slow down aging and improve your health over time. I'm really excited to see what our results will say and what I can do differently to better support my body as I age. It may be I'm adjusting my sleep. It may be changing supplements. It may be making smarter food choices or exercising more. It feels empowering to know that aging isn't just something that happens. It's something that we have control of. The test itself is super easy. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You send in your sample using a prepaid mailer, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get a detailed online report with actionable insights that you can use. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code BASEBALL to get 20% off your entire order of subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BASEBALL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Yeah, the shortstop capital is the most exciting. What stood out to me in this staff draft was actually the lack of outfield capital in this class. And I think both on the college side and the high school side, we had six outfielders go in this 40-pick staff draft. The first high school outfielder didn't come off the board until, let me see, 26 here with the Phillies, Slater DeBrun. And then we had just a number of college outfielders in this year's class who either didn't have great seasons and kind of regressed with their draft stock or dealt with injury. And so I think it's a combination of having a really strong infield capital that's pushing the outfielders down in general and just no really standout outfield profiles to point to and have a lot of confidence in. I mean, it wouldn't be entirely surprising to me based on how this mock went if there was only a single outfielder taken in the first 20 picks. And that might also just depend on, does Ike Irish get drafted as an outfielder or a catcher? I would imagine he gets drafted as a catcher, but it's perfectly likely that he could get drafted as an outfielder as well. So if you're heading into this draft and you have a system where you're looking around your organizational depth and you don't have any outfielders, I'm not sure if it's the best position to be kind of hunting a need for. But I also don't know if you should be hunting for needs in the first round. So maybe that's irrelevant.
And yeah, I'm of the – oh, sorry, JJ.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Peter. Go
ahead. Round, I'm of the headspace of just take the best player available. I that might be simplifying it a little bit too much, but, you know, take the dude that's your 1-1 on your own personal draft board. And I think even towards the end of the staff draft, when looking back and reflecting on it, I sort of had some of the same takeaways as I did at the start, you know, sort of playing into the openness. Like, there were a number of guys I considered with my last pick. I'm sure others felt the same. Like, there are guys that did not go in this 40-pick staff draft that very well could go inside the first 40, 35, or perhaps even 30 picks come draft night. So it'll be an exciting Sunday night.
So, okay, we have more questions. We want to kind of try to cover as many of these as we can. So John Conway, draft miss is almost upon us.
a name or two that you're hearing for the Giants at 13. Carlos, you do our mocks. So anyone that you're hearing or anyone that you would kind of connect with the Giants?
Yeah, the Giants are interesting because we've heard a lot of chatter in the last few weeks that this pick is going to be more scout oriented, however you want to take that. I think a lot of it has to do with just Buster Posey being in charge there and putting much more of an a heavy weight on scouting in general in the organization at this point. I think scouts could land on any number of different profiles, so that doesn't really clarify it a ton. We've heard that this is the range that feels like the floor for high school shortstops JoJo Parker and Billy Carlson. If either of those players are available, I would imagine San Francisco would be in on them, and I wouldn't expect them to get much further than this pick if they are available. Merrick Houston is the name that we have them tied to in the most recent mock draft. He is probably the safest profile in the class. Once you get outside of the top 10, he's been a name that a number of scouting directors have brought up to me. Teams really like him because there's high confidence he's going to stick at shortstop, be a good defender. He's got a long track record of making a lot of contact. The power is starting to come as well. So if you are looking around and the bats that you see aren't too exciting, maybe some of the risk profiles of the high school players is a little too much for you, I think Merrick Houston makes sense on talent in this range as well. So those are a few names, all of the shortstop variety that I think makes sense for San Francisco.
And Carlos, we're going to come right back to you here again as Mr. Mock with Paulino89. Ask any strong, this was the broader one, any strong player team connections that you guys are feeling confident about?
Yeah, as I scan down the list, I mean, the one you get most often is the Rockies with Ethan Holliday. It sounds like he's really their guy, and they'd love to get a shot at him. I've heard both Ethan Willits and Jamie Arnold tied to the Cardinals quite a bit. In our last mock, we've heard a lot of JoJo Parker to the Blue Jays specifically. I think Eli Willits is also another name that fits with them. Once you start getting into this range on the board, it really gets hard to feel ultra confident in any player team connections because, again, the teams themselves just have a huge level of uncertainty as to who is actually going to be available. Everyone has massive pools of players they're considering. So beyond that, it's a lot of speculating more than anything. So yeah, those are some of the hotter team player connections at the top of the draft I can throw out.
So, okay. And we got one more we're going to get to before the break here, which is Jay Schmitty asking, have the Mariners been connected to any of the local high schoolers, Nayans, Cruz Schoolcraft, Slater DeBrun, guys like that? So that's a little tougher because that's a little, they're picking a little bit lower down, aren't they?
Well, the Mariners are picking third. I don't think any of those players will be.
Their second pick. They're not going to take that guy, right? Any of those guys at their first pick.
Right. All of those names would be surprising at three on an underslot deal. I haven't heard them mentioned quite that high. I think there's a non-zero chance that all three of those guys are available at 35. I don't think that's particularly likely. I think DeBrun, Schoolcraft, Nines all have real landing spots in between 3 and 35 for the Mariners. One thing to point out, though, again, for Seattle is they have more pool money to work with than anyone. So if there is a player who actually fits just historically on players that slide down the board and command overslot bonuses, Cruz Schoolcraft is kind of the epitome of that. It's a high school pitcher. Sounds like he's got a pretty strong college commitment. Sounds like he's going to have a high price tag. These are the sorts of players that you can more easily navigate down the board to your pick. Bubba Chandler is maybe one of the best recent examples of this profile. Those could all make sense.
So we have a lot of questions we've covered. I think we actually covered Blueberry's Life's question about the Blue Jays already, just incidentally, as we were kind of covering that. But we'll have more of those. But we also want to lay out for you why this draft could end up being very memorable, and we'll do that after this break.
Hey, let's do a little player spotlight thanks to Arena Club. AJ, give me a player this season that you think is underrated and you might want to try and grab his card.
James Wood. I don't know that he's underrated, but Washington Nationals superstar in the making, and the first slab pack I ever opened had him in it. His rookie card, and the value is only going to go up and up and up. And I'm not going to sell it quite yet, Scott. I'm going to hold on to it because after he continues to hit big homers and put up the stats, make all-star teams, it's going to get more expensive for someone to buy for me.
This is his first full season in the majors. Keep that in mind. I think he's underrated. He's on a Nationals team that's meh, not getting enough attention.
He might hit 40 homers. When he makes the all-star team this year, they're not going to be underrated.
That helps. He's been intentionally walked 4 times in a game. Anyway, if you want to try and find a Wood rookie card, go check out Slab Packs on Arena Club. And right now you can get 20% off your first Slab Pack, or if you just want to go with a card purchase, go to arenaclub.com/FOUL. Use code FOUL. If you buy, sell, trade, collect, go for it.
So we have so many different ways that this draft could make history. We have the possibility that Ethan Holiday could become the first pair of brothers joining his brother Jackson to both go 1-1. Carlos, that's just one. I think we came up with five or six different ways that this could end up being kind of a crazy draft. What are some of the other things that we should look for on Sunday night?
Yeah, I really think there are a number of interesting ways we can make history with the first overall pick, which is a lot of fun. All four of our top four ranked players on the board have avenues to draft history. You mentioned Ethan Holiday, first brother duo 1-1. Eli Willits could be the youngest player that we've ever seen drafted 1-1 overall. The group of names that he would be right alongside in that category is pretty impressive. The hit rate is pretty good. We could have our fourth-ranked player, Kate Anderson. He could be the first ever pitcher who has already had Tommy John surgery go 1-1 overall. To our knowledge, that's never happened before in the draft. And then Seth Hernandez, who's our top-ranked pitcher on the board, if he goes 1-1, it's the first ever high school right-handed pitcher to go first overall. If none of those players go first overall, well, the mock drafts are probably going to be in shambles. But also, I think there's still plenty of other draft records you could point to and say still probably has a decent chance of happening. The shortstop capital this year, we're expecting to at least match the most we've ever had. I believe it's 10 shortstops in the first 30 picks. Realistic path to 12 or 13 in the first 30 picks, depending on how some players are selected. And then you have the whole Corona trio of players who, depending on where they go, Seth Hernandez, Billy Carlson, Brady Ebel, I feel pretty confident that they're going to make history in some capacity. It's just the amount of like how high they go, which specific records are they breaking. So it's going to be a really fun draft just in terms of things we've never seen before, which maybe is the case every year, but it's really clear this year there are a lot of fun things that we're going to see.
Okay, Peter, I'm going to put you on the spot as well here. Like, who is someone that we're going to see picked on Sunday? Let's say Sunday. If you want to throw off someone from Monday, but who's someone, who's a gut feel guy for you that you're thinking, you know, like when whoever picks him is going to be a team that's going to end up looking back on this and being very happy? Now, again, you can go 1-1, but I'm guessing you're going to go a little further down the board.
Yeah. So I'm relegated to round one only. I really
no,
like
you don't.
Josh
no,
Owens.
It does not. It's anywhere, anywhere.
All right. So I like Josh Owens a lot. He's kind of been a steady up arrow helium guy, one of the more buzzier guys on the prep circuit. I took him at 39 with my last pick in the staff draft. He's a really good athlete. There's a fun blend of now tools and upside. He's got a plus arm on the left side of the infield. He's a really, really good athlete, as I said. He also plays football at Providence Academy in Tennessee. A really good swing from the left side, 6'3". Could eventually grow into plus power. Again, I think there's a tantalizing blend of now tools and upside with Owens that make him really, really exciting.
The questions keep coming. We're going to try to get at least one more into the show here. Blueberry's Life has a question here. I think Blueberry's Life might be a Blue Jays fan. That's going to be my guess. But wants to know, would the Jays select another high school shortstop with the shortstop they've drafted in the last year or two, like Namala? Carlos,
yes.
I am putting this on the tee for you. High school shortstops. Do you ever not draft them because, oh no, we already have high school shortstops in our organization?
Yeah, I think this is just really worth hammering home for the draft, for people who are maybe not super into the draft at a high level. But just because you've taken a player at a different profile previously or at the same position previously does not mean you're going to avoid that in a draft. Like Peter said earlier, you want to take the best players available. High school shortstops in particular are a profile that teams want as much as they possibly can get of them. These are players who have lots of avenues to success at the major league level. They can slide off the position. High school shortstops can play third base, second base. A lot of them can move to the outfield. You are not worried about players you've taken recently. You're not worried about the caliber of player on your major league team at a certain position when you're drafting in baseball, because by the time these players get major league ready, your draft needs the how blocked certain positions are going to be entirely different. And if you get into a situation where you're drafting for current holes on your team, you're going to pass on players who are more talented and your drafts are not going to look as strong as they should. If you get into a situation where you have too many good shortstops that are major league ready, that's a phenomenal problem to have, that every team in baseball wants to have that problem. You trade those players and you fill other holes at your team. So shortstops in particular, pitchers in particular, up the middle players in particular, you can't get enough good players at those profiles.
You can't, and the Padres are the perfect example of this. They drafted Jackson Merrill. Him ending up in center field is fine for them. It's not a problem. You can play shortstops pretty much anywhere, but the other thing about that is high school shortstops are shortstops in high school because you want your high school first rounder to be the best athlete on the field for his team. Okay, Corona might be the example where there's the exception if you have another first rounder on the team, but other than that, you want them to be shortstops because the best athlete who throws right-handed almost always plays shortstop. If you've enjoyed this, there's a lot more on the Baseball America YouTube channel, but also make sure to like and subscribe. And this time next week, we will be doing this all live together as we are wrapping up the draft. Check out all the draft and prospect coverage on the BA YouTube channel, the Baseball America website, and the Foul Territory YouTube channel as well. 6 days to go. We're looking forward to it. We hope you all are too. Thank you for joining us here on the BA Hot Sheet Show.